Pam Stoddard, and she's a senior epidemiologist at the Santa Clara County Public Health Department in San Jose, California. She serves as the technical lead for surveillance and public health research activities for the department and also manages the community health assessments, such as the one she's going to be telling us about now.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. I'm excited to be here to talk to you about our experience with a community-engaged research project in San Jose. I have no relationship to disclose. Last year, the Public Health Department in Santa Clara County conducted a health assessment for the Vietnamese community, and we used a community-engaged research approach. Community-engaged research, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, is really a framework for conducting research. It's not a specific methodology, so it's really about encouraging recognition of the strengths of community institutions and individuals. It's characterized by principles and relationships, not methods. And it requires everything we've heard about today, so partnership development, cooperation and negotiation, for sure, collaboration, and a commitment to addressing local health issues. So why use a community-engaged research approach? Well, one thing we know is that engaging underrepresented voices is central to addressing health disparities, so we heard a lot about that today. But this can be challenging for local public health agencies. So some cultures may view health-related questions as overly invasive, and some communities can mistrust government agencies based on adverse experiences in countries of origin. So this would be more common in refugee populations like the Vietnamese population who've had very bad experiences in the past. So a community-engaged research approach can help to address some of these issues. And there's a growing body of research on community-engaged and community-based participatory research with Asian populations, but most of them have described outcomes or findings. There's limited research on the process of community-engaged research, especially with Vietnamese or other Asian refugee populations. There have been a number of studies also that have focused on what's called convenience samples, which are a less scientific approach, and also there's been less work kind of on Asian subgroups. So my objectives today are just to really describe the assessment, so to give you a sense of the process of what we went through and to describe the lessons learned in, specifically in using this community-engaged research approach. So a little context. In Santa Clara County, we have an extensive surveillance program, but most of our surveys are conducted in English and Spanish, and this is even though Asian and Pacific Islanders are a third of the county population. So we include Asians and Pacific Islanders in the assessments, but they can only participate if they are able to be interviewed in English. Vietnamese residents are 8% of the county population, and we know at the Public Health Department that they have unique needs relative to other Asian subgroups. First, they're more socioeconomically disadvantaged, which you'll see in a moment, and they're also a refugee population. So they didn't come to Santa Clara County as part of sort of the Silicon Valley technology immigration, so they're going to have a lot of different needs relative to these other Asian groups in the county. And so this assessment really gave the Public Health Department a chance to take a close look at the needs of this unique population. So I'm not going to say a lot about this, but the Vietnamese population in Santa Clara County is very large relative to the nation, and that arrow points to where Santa Clara County is in case you're not familiar with the area. So in terms of median income, the median income of the Vietnamese community is right in the middle in terms of racial ethnic groups in the county. So there are the farthest bar on the left, and you can see they're quite a bit lower than all Asians who are next, and whites who are the third bar, but they're right in the middle in terms of having a higher median household income than African Americans or Hispanics. So some more on context, the Vietnamese community has been in the county since the 1970s, and now more than 40 years later, they're very well organized, they're a big constituency, they are a documented population, so they have a high naturalization rate, so they're now a big voting constituency in Santa Clara County. A major stakeholder is the Vietnamese Reach for Health Coalition, and I'll call them VRHC. And they were originally created by some CDC funding, and they've been conducting data collection for more than a decade on the Vietnamese population, so they really value data. So the VRHC approached the president of the Board of Supervisors and requested a health assessment on their population. The president's district has a large Vietnamese constituency, and I think this is a really important part of this story. Most community-engaged or community-participatory research projects do not come through political channels. Most of them that you probably have heard about are initiated by a community group, but they directly would approach a public health department or a university as a partner, or vice versa. The public health department or the university would directly approach the community group, and here we have this third party involved, which is the president of the Board of Supervisors, and of course the Public Health Department has a reporting relationship in that kind of political channel. So even though the community has not had good experiences with government sort of in their country of origin, I think it's important that they're now organized and they're finding political influence, and that really affects the dynamic of a community-engaged research project in a special way. So my department was asked to conduct the assessment. We have a large and skilled epidemiology unit. We're very experienced in conducting large-scale public health surveys, and we also had an existing relationship with VRHC. The other important piece of the context was that we had a short timeline. It was a politically, initiated process that needed to be completed within the Board of Supervisors President's term, which is a one-year period, a very short period of time. But the good thing is that he did provide financial resources for the assessment, so we were able to do more. So our goals for using a community-engaged research approach were to ensure that the assessment would be relevant to the community, to design something that was culturally appropriate and culturally acceptable to the community, and to increase, hopefully, the applicability of findings so that they would be used. And our strategies were to appoint an advisory board, to use grassroots methods and outreach. And I'm going to talk more about the first two. So the advisory board was made up of a number of organizations, which you can see here, mostly CBOs, government, other government agencies, local university faculty, and healthcare. And our roles, I don't think there's anything super unique here relative to a community-engaged research process. The advisory board really set the goals, the kind of the direction. They suggested methods. We suggested methods. They really selected kind of the topics of the assessment. They reviewed the questions that we selected the measures. They would review the questions. We suggested translation. They reviewed that. We really managed the data collection analysis and reporting. They did the outreach. And then when we had the findings, they identified what the priorities were and made recommendations. So as I said, they really set the goals, and the goals ended up being conflicting in terms of what they wanted. So early on, they had established that they wanted a grassroots approach, and that meant to them data collection by community members. And as I said, they thought that because there was sort of this historic mistrust that the Vietnamese population would not answer a telephone call from a government agency, they thought that would limit response. Also, health-related questions were seen as overly invasive. They were concerned about that, and they thought that this lack of trust, you really wouldn't want to answer them from a government agency. And they were also concerned about hard-to-reach populations. So some of the traditional scientific methods do not do very well in reaching very isolated individuals, young adults in particular, they were really interested in. And so they wanted something that was more grassroots. But at the same time, they were very clear that they wanted a health assessment that was representative of the county in general, and that requires a more scientific approach. And then the third thing is that they really wanted data on stigmatized conditions. So they wanted data on domestic violence and substance use, but we already knew from past surveys of Asian populations that there would not be enough cases to report. So these are some real challenges. So what we did was we designed a multi-pronged approach. We kind of did it all. We had the resources to do this. So the first thing we did was we did a telephone survey, which was a random and representative sample of Vietnamese adults in the county. We managed that process over an eight-week period, and we collected about 820 responses, which was pretty good, and it was our goal. And this survey covered physical, mental health care, health care, and health behavior. So if you're familiar with the CDC Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, it's very much like that survey. Then the Public Health Department also analyzed a lot of existing data that was also based on really good data, really random, really representative. We used birth data and death data, things like that. And that kind of filled out the picture, but they wanted this countywide picture of Vietnamese health. And the third thing we did was we collected some what's called convenience samples. So these are not random samples. We did four surveys of the general population and hard-to-reach population, so separate surveys. We had a youth survey and an older adult survey. And these were collected by a Vietnamese CBO over a 10-week period. So this kind of satisfied that desire for grassroots data collection. And these were collected at kind of festivals, Vietnamese festivals over the summer, and online. And it was very successful. I mean, in 10 weeks, they collected 1,000 surveys. So that was pretty amazing. So I wanted to go over some lessons learned about the data collection. First was the response. So the telephone survey, which was the one they were pretty worried about, had a good response, about 52%. So about 1 in 2 people who were selected decided to complete the survey. So that was good. We also found that almost all wanted to respond in Vietnamese. So it's not that they couldn't speak English, it's that preferred to respond in Vietnamese. But we probably are missing a good portion of them in the regular surveillance that we do at the department. The other thing was that specialized interests on the advisory board determined the survey content over technical advice. So as I said, there were health outcomes that we knew would not be reportable because there just wouldn't be enough people who would answer the questions, like domestic violence was not reportable, substance use, we couldn't, and these comprised maybe, I don't know, 20-30% of the survey questions. So this supplanted other important areas of inquiry. And competing interests on the advisory board also led to a lack of focus. It was really more about breadth than depth. So we were only able to maybe ask a question or two about each topic. That was it. The short timeline meant for a shorter questionnaire, we probably could have doubled the length, but it takes longer. It was more costly. We couldn't include other racial ethnic groups for comparison. That's a problem. And the translation was rushed, and that was frustrating for people. So it was a real challenge. Also, the public health department lacked expertise in measuring indicators that the community said were important to them, like gambling. So we had no idea how to measure gambling, and we really had to scramble to find those measures, and it made us realize that we have a need to develop kind of pre-existing relationships with people who know more about the indicators that are important to our community so that we're ready to go into the field when we need to. So this is just a question about mental health. So 40% of respondents did say that they had some emotional issues that interfered with their daily activities. So this is just to make the point that they responded to questions that might be seen as invasive. But in terms of gambling, 82% said never, and the community was pretty sure this is underreported because gambling is a huge part of Vietnamese culture, and they think that number should be about 100%. Have probably gambled in the last year. 82% said never, so those are some issues there. So moving on to these convenience samples that we collected at community events, we found they were a good method to reach hard-to-reach populations. And we also found that there was more reporting of stigmatized conditions among young adults. So instead of maybe, you know, asking questions about domestic violence for an adult population, maybe we should just start focusing on younger people who are and get a sense of what's going on there. And it might be a better use of resources. But a big problem is they didn't demonstrate the need that was perceived by the advisory board. So we knew in advance, healthier people attend community events. If you're disabled or depressed, you don't feel like going to a festival, you can't get there. We also selected events where it was easier for us to gain access because we had a short timeline. We did some surveying at religious events. Religious people tend to have better health behaviors and so on. So it's really a healthier population. So maybe this really wasn't, the events at least, maybe wasn't the right place to conduct a convenience sample. Maybe you want to go to some shopping centers or transportation hubs. But in general, this is a problem. If you're going to want to demonstrate need and you do it with this grassroots approach, they were a little disappointed. Also, the grassroots approach really required a community-based organization to collect it. That's the definition. But it really wasn't possible without that CBO having prior experience. So we found one that had done a few big surveys before, and they were able to conduct this big, large-scale assessment. But without that, it really would not have been possible. So I don't have time to talk about outreach, I think.
Yeah, a couple more.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go right to the action steps, but I can talk to you about outreach afterwards. So the community identified cancer and cancer screening, mental health and healthcare access as the three priorities that came out of the assessment. And since then, VRHC has held a day-long, we just finished up in December of last year. They held a day-long forum on mental health. They've also done some successful grant writing, and they have a new focus on grant writing for chronic diseases because the assessment identified some problems with diabetes and heart disease, which was actually new for them and surprising. So that's a good thing that's come out of it. And they're also connecting with experts around the Affordable Care Act. The public health department has not been able to take as much action as we'd like, so we're expanding our capacity. We're hiring somebody to specifically kind of take these health assessments to the next step in working with the community and doing more language certification. And we also hired a Vietnamese health educator. So lessons learned, I think that around the action part, which is really another goal of community engaged research, is that it leads to action. I think unclear roles on next steps might have limited the use of the findings, so kind of who was really going to do what. It wasn't that clear, and we didn't have a lot of time to sort that through. Our role as the technical lead meant that as a department, we couldn't advocate for questions that were related to our focus, and those are tobacco use, obesity, and violence and injury. And it just doesn't leave us a lot of avenues for action. We're not really able to kind of shift gears because, a lot of our staff is now grant funded. They selected priorities that were outside of our focus, so we don't have a lot of work on healthcare access. We have a mental health department in the county, so it's not part of the public health department. So because of that, it didn't leave us as many avenues, I think, for action as would have been and could have been the case. So just a few discussion points. I think this really demonstrated the efficacy of flexible approaches to assessment and decision making. We were able to engage an underrepresented community with historic mistrust in identifying priorities for themselves, and it definitely prompted more culturally relevant surveillance on the part of the public health department kind of at all levels. Also, I think another important point is the initiation of health assessments through political channels like this one may increase as vulnerable populations organize and gain political representation. So if that's the case, then we need to know more about health assessments that are initiated through political channels like this to improve their effectiveness. Health assessments also initiated through political channels raise important health equity issues for local public health agencies. So as you saw, the Vietnamese population is not the most disadvantaged population in our county. The African American and Hispanic populations are more disadvantaged. So as some groups become more politically empowered, what happens to the groups who aren't maybe as well organized or aren't as politically empowered for the number of reasons that we know interfere with that political empowerment? What about those groups? So those are questions that we're grappling with now. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd really like to thank all our presenters, and now I'd open it up for questions. And anybody have questions for our presenters? You guys want to come up here? Or it's okay to stay down there? Your choice. I have a question, actually, and I could ask a very similar question. So this is the Community Health Planning and Policy Development section, and what I was hearing was a lot about the community health assessments and stuff, and so I'm wondering from each of you how you think that what you've done now can be used to influence policy. Why don't we start here?
Sure.
You guys are up.
Well, I think that having community health assessments, especially when it comes from, working directly with local residents, is just so crucial because when you're passing health policy, especially local policy, you got to remember that that's just half of the challenge. The other secondary half of the challenge has always been implementation. Very easily, there at any time, at least in my experience, we could have passed policies being under the city manager's office and just gone through an administrative hearing and administrative policy without having to do a public hearing. But when you involve community residents in the process from the onset, using CBPR approaches, having them go out and do the evaluation, getting the true sense of being involved, it creates a sense of accountability that, hey, this is my city. This is important to me. This is important because I'm part of it as well. So once you pass your policy, it creates a inherent sense of, hey, I'm responsible for this. I need to implement this. I need to be a part of it. And we've noticed, and unfortunately we don't have any comparison models of, you know, how policies have existed without community engagement, but with the policies that we have passed, we've noticed that our community residents are more accountable. We notice that our community residents do put pressure on our local city departments to say, hey, we haven't seen the vending machines start having the healthier options like we said. You know, you said you would. We passed the policy August 1st. Now what's going on, you know? So it's really interesting because, you know, we do have tools, and we had our local residents actually inform those assessments, help to create the surveys using, of course, you know, technical assistance providers and evaluation specialists to do that. So overall, we think that it's a really good approach to invite your community partners to be a part of it and to be a part of the process, because it also, besides, you know, public health aspects, it also increases civic engagement.
For me, it's quite unique because we're from the CBO, community-based organizations, and the main purpose I have spelled out early already, there's not so much data about the population that we have served, and then most of the time that the county, the state, they try to design a program, a community health program, they seem not to include those subpopulations. And one of the specific finding in this community assessment we used to inform the policy that within this population, there are also a subpopulation, because our community assessment not just only going to the resident who just speak English. We also go to those who do not speak English, and then the community health worker that were trained to conduct an assessment, and a community person who know the community, and then building trust with them so that they can provide the real and deep answer from their heart to us. And also we reach a specific population like religious leaders. And because of religious problem, they might want to participate in civic participation and those kind of things. But we do reach out to them. We also do reach out to Muslim Cambodian, which is really a population that are hard to reach because of religious problem. In addition to that, the Cambodian family have been working with as a partnership. As a partnership, we want them to know that they're not working alone to raise our voice only, but this is community-wise and also the partner-wise. We are helping them. We're helping to collect more than 1,500 surveys as a partnership effort, and within that partnership effort, we also have a question asking about civic participation. And as you might see in the slide, that I would like to thank you very much for asking my opinion about that, because even them, have you known something about the city planning doing a railroad track improvement within your neighborhood? Said, no, I never been involved in that process at all. And the city said, yes, I did invite the population, I did invite your residents to attend, but who end up attending, and those who speak the language and don't have access to multimedia or technology, and those who are senior over 65 or come from a background where they have low education or literacy level is so low, they do not have any access to those kind of things at all. So this is a way to let the city know that when you do connect city plan and everything, you have to consider those who have a difficulty in reaching out to you. So you should listen from the order. So I believe that this kind of community assessment, we have asked to make a good path for all community residents to get their voice heard, not only at the city, but also at the state. And this is informed the decision maker that if you are helping the population, you have to look at, you have to make sure that the data is disaggregated at a different level of subpopulation. One of example is that there's a report coming out, Asian American health has been improved. But why are this population are still dying from heart disease and stroke? Because you do not know what is the habit, what is the culture within that population. Yeah.
Two things I wanted to add is that when, just as they're saying, when in walking, if more people walk, they reclaim the community. They reclaim that as it belongs. This space that is the public right-of-way, whether it's a street, a park, a civic building, it belongs to all of us. And as we become partners, we expect more and we do more. And that can actually be translated as far as the state. We have an opportunity now with the Sustainable Community Transportation to make a difference in actually creating the world we want. And a lot of people want to keep the same old world we've had, which is killing us. And the people who already suffer from asthma know they can't continue to breathe in air. And when they come and talk to the people who don't want to bother changing their investments, it makes it harder to say no. Two, but people start to understand that they are entitled to have a fair share. And that it's our obligation, all of us, to make sure that everybody has a fair share.